professor in the Department of Plant Sciences at UC Davis and the lead researcher for the Redwood Genome Project. A lot of the money for this came from your group, Emily?
That's right. Save the Redwoods League has been investing in science that will help us do smarter conservation and restoration in the Coast Redwood and Giant Sequoia ecosystems.
So when people think, oh, this is this taxpayer money, not much taxpayer money was involved.
This has come from the generosity of private donors. Ralph Eschenbach and Carol Provan made the lead gift to help initiate this really exciting cutting-edge project.
And what do you hope, David Neal, about the effect on genomic diversity, ultimately?
Well, we're just trying to discover it, determine how much genetic variation remains and how it's distributed across the landscape. And then once we understand that, then we can use that information in restoration strategies.
But you're talking about a lot of thing that's been done with respect to that. I mean, I'm thinking about what the effect would be generally on genomic diversity, because there have been, you know, fuel loads and accelerated growth, and there have been drones that have, clones, that have been planted and so forth. There's been a lot that's going on that really, in many ways, can confuse us, I think, right?
Well, we're concerned about how much may have been lost.
Yeah, exactly.
And we, certainly a lot of it remains, but where remains across the landscape and how it will be naturally evolved or by, you know, human activities in terms of distribution of planting of trees across the landscape, we need to understand all of that to restore these populations correctly.
Well, we've been seeing bumper stickers and hearing for years now, save the redwoods, and this means that we can indeed or might be able to save the redwoods?
Well, it's a piece of it, you know. Save the Redwoods League, of course, has done for 100 years now, conserving land where oak trees remain, but now they're moving into a generation where they're restoring what was cut over. And using modern technologies to aid them in that process.
But we heard the, I think listeners heard the statistic I brought up before, Emily, and that is 95% in the last century and a half.
That's for Coast Redwood, that's right. And about a quarter of the original redwood forest was completely eliminated by development and roads. So we know that we've lost unique individuals on the landscape, but we have this real opportunity now when we're going into these younger forests and doing thinning projects, which actually means removing and cutting trees, to make sure that we protect all of the unique genetic individuals and to make sure that we keep the diversity as high as possible while we're doing things like reducing fuel risks and increasing the pace of growth for these young trees that have the potential to become the old growth of the future.
And let's talk about the giant sequoias, because about a third of them have been tagged, right?
Giant sequoia has a much smaller ecosystem footprint, so it already has many fewer individuals left on Earth. Because, as you say, a third of the groves in the Sierra Nevada have had some amount of logging, we know that's an issue. And the changing fire and intense wildfires that are moving through our coniferous forests in the mountains really pose a risk. And so it's never been more important to be enhancing our conservation strategies, and we think this genomic insight is a critical next step.
And can you talk a little bit more, David Neal, about drought tolerance and fire resistance in this whole picture?
Well, drought tolerance is a trait that is pretty well understood in a lot of plant systems, from model systems through to different tree species. So we understand sort of the basic biology of that, but we have not yet applied any of that fundamental understanding to the genetic control of drought tolerance in either Coast Redwood or Giant Sequoia. But all those experiments are planned in the next couple of years. It's work that we've done before in other species, so the path forward on that to discovery is pretty straightforward for us.
This sounds pretty positive for the most part. I mean, we can actually restore the species and maybe make them healthy again.
Well, that's what we'd like to do.
I'm very pleased at least the prospects for this, and I think probably many of our listeners feel the same way. And again, if you have questions or if you have comments, we welcome them. You can join us toll-free, 866-733-6786. Let's go to your calls. Let's begin with you, Benjamin. You're on the air. Good morning.
Hi, guys. I love your show. I've been a listener for a long time. Anyway, I'm calling from San Jose, and I was just curious, you know, are you guys trying to bring back older species of redwoods, and how do you see them faring and being able to survive amongst, you know, the more members of a species of tree that you have, you know, the faster evolution goes, and I suppose that those new species would have a better off chance of surviving and taking over the land. So I'm just wondering, how do you guys foresee the older species that you're trying to bring back? You know, how will they fare, and will this be a long-term viable strategy?
Good, important question, Benjamin. Thank you for that. Emily Burns.
Well, we're focusing on the current redwood species we have in California today, the coast redwood and giant sequoia. And as the caller points out, there absolutely were other species, other redwood relatives that used to dominate the northern hemisphere in deep geologic time. We're really focusing on the species in our conservation focus today that are in the natural forest. We really don't want to see any decline of these populations. So that's where our conservation focus is.
And I thank the caller. We'll go to more calls in a moment. But first, let me go to a question for you, Professor Neal. A listener asks, how many varieties of coast redwood are there? And also, with the genome, could somebody start using it and CRISPR to create modified redwoods?
Well, redwoods are like no different than human populations. Nearly every one of those trees out there might be different genetically than the next. So this is what we hope to do, is to understand what those differences are among those things.
What about something like CRISPR, gene editing, for example?
That's possible in any organism, including redwood. It's not something that I'm involved in or would choose to do, but it's certainly possible.
I would argue that they're already super trees. They're incredibly tall. They sequester so much carbon. They're resistant to fire and drought, we're learning. So I don't think they need improvement.
Okay, well, let's hear from some more of our listeners. David joins us. David, you're on the air.
Yeah, I'm an architect in San Francisco, and I was introduced to insulated concrete forms in Mexico, which more or less eliminate the need for wood. And I'm always wondering whether, because I hear counter arguments that forestry can actually be, help reduce, you know, could work positively towards climate reduction of climate change problems. But the basic question is, if we eliminated wood completely, is there any kind of theory about whether, that would solve or have a significant effect on climate change?
And Emily, any thoughts from you on this? Emily Burns?
Well, I would say that there are so many co-benefits with having forests on the landscape, and whether a forest, a professor I had said, all forests work, only some of them get paid. And so we have forests out there that are doing a tremendous amount of carbon sequestration and are storing it. They're providing clean water for communities around California, vital wildlife habitat for species that depend on our redwood forests. So I would say, if we lost the timber industry in California, if we lost the ability to keep these forests as forests, there's many other things we would lose at the same time.
And let me go to a question from a listener named Ben, David Neal. He says, I'm curious if there are any applications for this discovery related to sudden oak death. My understanding is that redwoods are hosts, so they are immune to the virus, but can it pass it on to surrounding oaks? Could this discovery help identify certain variations of redwoods which would be especially appropriate in close proximity to oak trees?
Well, if I understand the question correctly, that many of the oak species are susceptible to sudden oak death, and redwood may not be. So one possibility would be to compare the genome sequence of oak versus redwood and see what genetically may account for susceptibility or resistance. The valley oak genome has just recently been sequenced. All these opportunities come forward now with these genome sequence resources that are available to us.
Yeah, that's why I keep emphasizing how historic it is. I mean, it opens up all kinds of possibilities. Another listener wants to know, can you talk a little bit about how closely the two species, coastal redwood and giant sequoia, are related, and if this new data really adds up to our understanding of their relationship? Professor Neal?
Well, I wish Allison Scott, my postdoc, whose PhD thesis was very much on this topic, was standing here next to me because she would answer the question.
Well, since you don't have her there, why don't you make an effort?
there's a lot of data already that Allison actually generated to answer this question. It's all been published. Having the full genome sequences will shed additional light on it, I don't think it'll deepen our understanding of the time-sense divergence between Coast Redwood and Giant Sequoia.
So there's much more to learn. Is the work that Allison, your postdoc, did available online at all?
It's published. It was published in a journal called New Phytologist about a year or two ago.
Okay. Let me get another caller aboard. Mike, that's you. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
Thank you. Okay.
Hey, I wanted to know if you guys are familiar with the organization. They're called Archangel, and they clone the old forest, the old growth trees. And they just planted a bunch in the Presidio, and I didn't know if you guys were in touch with them or not.
I think Emily from Save the Redwoods is nodding her head yes, but do you want to say something here, David Neal?
No, I think Emily could handle that question.
I'm sorry, I thought I heard your voice. Go ahead, Emily, if you would.
Yeah, we've been following what Archangel has been doing over the years. Their approach is different from Save the Redwoods League. We're focusing on natural genetic diversity, means we preferentially choose seeds that have had genetic recombination during sexual reproduction, and that's where genetic diversity comes from. The choice to use clones is not inherently bad, but we don't, like I said earlier, we don't know which trees are going to be the successful cohort of the future. So we're putting our money on as many different unique individuals as possible is going to give the forest the best chance to survive in the future.
Well, how do you decide when to use clones under what circumstances to use the clones?
I think that's really project by project in different parts of the Redwood Range. Sometimes decisions are made based on what plant stock is available, and clones are really easy to reproduce and to produce at mass scales. So they're very readily available for planting.
And let me thank Mike for his call and go to your call, and that's Ryan from Palo Alto. Good morning.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me. I just wanted a quick question about the merger of what's going on in research in AI related to genetic diversity, because there's a method where you use generative algorithms to add random noise to create new individuals that helps the population become more robust. Given the question previously about CRISPR, wouldn't it make sense to try and add some random noise to the genetic diversity and see what makes a more robust population of slightly diverse individuals?
David Neal.
Some would argue that that makes a great deal of sense. It's not a focus of our program. We're more interested in what's naturally on the landscape. But it could be argued that creating new genetic variation through technologies like CRISPR may ultimately be required. But that's not a current focus of what we're trying to do.
Let me thank the caller. We got seconds left here. Tom, can you be quick with your questions? I think you want to know about wildfire prevention. Important question. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was wondering if there's any redwood variety that could be selected genetically for the proposed fire breaks, really massive fire breaks in California after the campfire, because forest fires actually stop at the borders of old growth redwood forests and just come to a crawl.
Professor Neal.
I'm not sure I understood that question. I'm sorry, Michael.
Just wants to know if redwood forests can be used in wildfire prevention. Emily, you want to?
I would say that especially the older the forest, so the quicker we're able to grow large trees in these logged places, we're going to have more resilient forests to fire.
Well, there's lots to come in this whole new genomic discovery moving ahead, and lots to learn. And thank you both for helping us understand this to a greater extent. Emily Burns is Director of Science with Save the Redwood League, and David Neal is Professor in the Department of Plant Sciences at UC.